Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. I am Simon Cardy and with me this week is Joe Screbbles.
Hello.
Dale Driver.
Hello.
Joe
went a bit posh, so I went a bit, tried to go a bit common with it.
Yeah. We're playing our Watch Dogs versions of characters today.
We are the rough with the smooth is what we're known as. We are the peanut butter of podcasts. You get a bit of crunchy, you get a bit of smooth. Anyway, PS5.
Yep, all that.
No, I didn't really have a plan going into this.
Desperate. Absolutely desperate.
Let's just get to the point, which is we can now briefly say very limited stuff about the PlayStation 5. I am very lucky to have one in my home currently. What can I say about it? I can say that it is definitely large. I know we'd all heard that it's big and we'd seen the picture big. Until it was actually in my home and I put it next to my TV, I didn't realize quite how big it was.
It is. I think it's fucking grotesque. I hate the PS5's look so much. Like, everything about it makes me upset. I'm so glad it will be going behind my TV and I'll never look at it.
I don't mind it. I have it horizontal, so I have it laid down, which I think it looks a lot better. And it's definitely less intrusive that way. It doesn't look like, you know, it doesn't look like a skyscraper. It just looks like a box.
You know, online, the running hot take is that it's a large console. It's like the PS3 is a noisy console. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've established that. Something that hasn't been spoken about yet, I went into our studio yesterday with Jesse, who's got both consoles because we were doing some shooting with them. The Xbox Series X is so heavy. It's like it's got bricks in it, and nobody is talking about that yet.
Yeah, because you don't carry your console around, Dale.
I was carrying it yesterday, and I can, like, the PS5 is substantially lighter than the Xbox Series X.
Occasionally I do move my consoles around because my TV and my Virgin box don't have Disney Plus, so if I want to watch a film on Disney Plus downstairs, I have to bring my PlayStation downstairs to watch it because it's the only thing that has an app on it. Jesus. That's a very rare occurrence, I will admit.
Get a Fire Stick, mate. Come on.
I could do that.
I do still think all consoles should have a little GameCube handle on them, so that would work for the Xbox Series X.
Yeah.
Is the S heavy as well?
No. The S is one that is surprisingly small. Like, you know it's small, but when you see it in the flesh, you're like, this is insanely small. Like, I very much, thinking from personal use, I might want the S long term. I think X for work purposes, but just like aesthetically and the size of it and how nice it'll fit anywhere, like the S is way more up my street.
That's one thing I'll say about the PS5. It is very large, but it doesn't actually weigh as much as you think. But look, it probably weighs as much as the PS4 does.
Because it's like 80% fan, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. But I don't mind. I know the whole thing is, oh, it's so big. But I honestly don't mind because, like, if it stays silent, I'd rather have a silent console than one that's slightly bigger than the one I had before. Because that is one thing with the PS4, especially with more recent games like Avengers or Warzone. That makes, like, it literally does sound like a jet engine.
I am totally happy with the PS5 being big for the reason of keeping it quiet. That is no problem to me at all. I just wish it didn't look like the worst painting of a sci-fi building I've ever seen.
It's like someone has gone, can you sketch me what you think Dubai will look like in 50 years?
It's literally, I talked about this on another podcast recently. Did you know Akon is building a city in Senegal? It looks like one of Akon's fake buildings in Senegal.
Is he he's so lonely he has to build a city for himself?
You have to bring everything down. Nice little fact and you ruined it.
Can only talk about what the PS5 looks like mainly turned off at the moment. Can talk about the controller, which is a very nice controller. I don't know if I'm guessing you got a chance to hold it.
I held it. Yes, I haven't used it in a game or anything, but I've held it. I think, like, yes, it feels like a substantial step up. I haven't obviously experienced any of the haptic stuff, but the way the buttons feel, like, for example, the share and the options button, so much better. Like, I think the PS4 one, the way they're, like, mine always kind of gets stuck and I feel like I'm having to dig my finger in to actually press it. Where these ones are actually buttons that protrude and feel like
nice. I really like the D-pad as well. Like, those feel really, like, you feel like you're crunching them in, if you know what I mean. They're just kind of nice and smooth. The triggers are really nice. I'll get on, because I can talk briefly about, like, a 20-minute section of Astrobot, which we'll get on to soon. Which does show off the controller really well. But I just like the size of it as well. It's slightly bigger than the DualShock 4 and slightly weightier. So it doesn't feel like a cheap piece of gear at all, which is key.
Yeah.
But do you want to hear about Astro's Playroom. It's not Astrobot.
Yes, please.
I can talk about roughly 20 minutes. So I can talk about the cooling spring section, which is one area of the game. If you know the Astro games, you know that they are very good platformers. I think Astrobot Rescue Mission is probably my favorite VR game I've ever played.
I think I'd agree with that.
I'm thinking about that. I've made the statement and I'm not going to retract it because I believe it to be correct. It's just a really good platformer, I think, and they kind of take some of the stuff from that, some of the mechanics into this as well, so you feels recognizable if you have played the VR game. But yeah, basically you start off in this section. It's the cooling spring, so it's kind of based around the fan of the PS4, and you're supposed to be kind of like inside it.
That's
and
cool.
you start off on this beach, and the first thing you do when you run along the beach, you just feel like the controller just vibrate a little bit, like you're running on sand, like it's crunching through your fingers, and it's really weird, but it works really well. I suppose it's similar to what the Switch controllers have with HD Rumble, but it just feels like, it feels like a step up from that.
Did you find yourself like your attention being immediately drawn to it, or was it just a subtle thing that you had to pay attention to?
No, I instantly felt it, because like soon after as well, you have to run into kind of like this sandstorm, and you just feel the resistance and your controller shaking as you're walking through it as well. It's like it. And you go into water and you kind of feel like little splashes on the controller as well. It's really weird. It's like, it's obviously, it's all to do with touch. It's a hard thing to explain audibly, but it's so cool.
I'm really weirdly excited for haptic feedback in a way that I didn't think I would be. I do still wonder whether it's actually going to be used in very much stuff, because I bet it's quite hard to like, they must have a team to program that stuff, because when you're getting to the point of like individual pieces of controllers working and stuff, I think that could be an issue.
I wonder if they'll have like sand or like snow, if there'll be like tech like that that's like shared between studios. Like, if you want the controller to feel like you're walking on sand, kind of use this in a way. Like, there'll be shortcuts like that, but also linked. Like, I think the big feature so far that I felt is the adaptive triggers. Because we've heard all like the things like Horizon saying, like, you know, the bowstring will feel like you're pulling it back, and like, which game was it? Is it that said like guns without a jam?
Deathloop.
Deathloop. That's it. Like, that sort of stuff feels really cool. But like, even the subtle ways. So in this area of Astro's Playroom, you become a spring kind of at one point, and you just, the controllers suddenly become like, feel like you're pushing down on springs to jump up in the air. And it's just, and then you move around in the air with motion controls, which, you know, I doubt many games are actually going to use. Like, we've had motion control in the controller for a while, but it's just weird how, like, it feels like magic, but it's obviously not. Just like, 1 second you're pulling the trigger and it feels like something else, and then like that mind trick it's playing, that suddenly you feel like you're using a different controller the next second. Really odd. But yeah, also, the other thing I love about Astro's Playroom, it's just kind of a real, like, and it kind of got me like a little bit emotional at times.
What?
Because it's just this weird sort of homage and celebration of PlayStation.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of just, there's so many Easter eggs, and like, there's artifacts to collect in the level. So like, you like go off the beaten track and you'll find an artifact, which can just be something as stupid as like I don't know, the DualShock 3 that you found buried in the ground and you can like the boomerang look around one. It and stuff. No, just not the boomerang, but in this level there's the DualShock 3 and there's like the PlayStation Move navigation control. You'll just find these things, like it's a celebration of PlayStation. And also, like, if you know the Astrobot games, there's like loads of robots littered all over the place doing things, and like there's so many homages to like to just PlayStation games. Like in this first level, off the beach in the sea, you'll just see like a little Viking boat with an Astrobot with like red paint on him and a little Astrobot with a bow and arrow. That's and you're cool. Like, well, that's God of War. Like, there's
is this all
so
in the area you're allowed to talk about
throughout.
Is this all in the area you're allowed to talk about?
Yes, this is all in the area I'm
allowed to talk about. I just want that on the record.
Yes, this is all in the Cooling Springs. That's all just in the beach section. So there's four different parts of Cooling Springs. And like, there's other bits where you slide around on ice. Like, you've got a lot of, you know, traditional platforming mechanics going on, but they've just kind of put a big old paint of, like, PlayStation paint all over it and just kind of, it's basically showing off the controller is what it's doing, and it does it in a really fun way. And
I'm really excited to play it. Like, I only played Astrobot VR like 3 months ago for the first time, and I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And then hearing the way you describe it, like just being a great proof of concept for haptic feedback, but then also like this celebration of PlayStation as well. It just sounds like a really cool free game that you get
it's
in the console.
Really cool. Like, I don't, it's not a spoiler because there's already gameplays of this whole level out, but like, at the end of the level, it does a really cool thing that, like, it just a huge, like, hit of nostalgia will come to you. I don't know whether, I don't know if people want me to say it or not, but,
No, don't say it.
Let's leave it. Yeah. If you haven't watched it already, I'd just wait at this point because it's just cool to discover all these little touches for yourself, I think, especially if you, like us, just have a long history of PlayStation and all their consoles and games. So, yeah. I'm going to stop talking about that just in case I do say something I can't. But so far, I have 100% not. I want that to be clarified.
Boys, my house's internet is being weird, so I'm going to freak you out by appearing in two windows on your screen right now.
Oh, my God.
Oh, what is going on?
You look different. Oh, it's because it's a different device, that's right.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And now, I'm just going to plug in my headphones to the new
Joe,
one,
the white so balance is different, you. And I don't like it.
Right. And could you mute one of those so we don't hear you twice?
I'm out.
There we go. That's good. We're back.
Good.
We've changed good. Your order now. Cardi was on the bottom and now he's on the top.
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to.
I'm on top where I belong. But yeah, that's all we'll talk about that for now. I'm sure in the next couple of weeks we'll have a lot more to talk about PlayStation-wise. And indeed, Series X-wise.
I think we should say that, we can answer more questions pretty soon. So if people want to know things about the PS5, we could do a big feedback section next week answering your questions.
Happy to do that.
We've got Xboxes as well, so which we're allowed to say. So ask us questions about the new consoles, and we will attempt to answer them. I mean, I won't because I don't fucking have one yet. But
I was going to say I don't have one either. So,
but we'll get
mainly Cardi.
We'll get all the lucky boys on here.
That'll be IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com for all your next gen needs. I will say actually, while we're teasing that. A lot of fantastic sandwich feedback we've got the last week or two. So much, in fact, I think I'm going to officially announce this. A sandwich special is in the works.
Yeah. Remember Drowning?
Like the Drowning. This year we've gone big with Drowning and sandwiches. maybe we'll do it on like one of the console launch days just to really hit what people want on those days.
I'm sure Al's going to be really happy with this news when he comes back next week.
I'm sure the entire IGN organization will be delighted that we take up let's put ourselves in the decks at the top of the homepage as well. We'll have PS5 review, Xbox Series X and S review, and then IGN UK podcast sandwich special.
Just all caps, sandwich feedback.
Sandwich feedback. And just a big picture of all of us giving double thumbs up. No sandwiches on it.
I'd love that. All right, we're definitely going to do that. Maybe we could review each sandwich as well that everyone gives in to get full 1,000-word reviews for every sandwich.
Well, you'd have to make them all, though, wouldn't we?
Yeah. This almost seems like a different website at this point. Yeah. But we should get someone else to. Why don't we talk about Watch Dogs? Because that's actually something we should talk about probably on this podcast. Me and Dell have actually both finished Watch Dogs Legion. Well, finished the main campaign anyway. Yeah. There's other stuff to do afterwards, as you'd expect in an open world game. Mm-hmm. How far through do you think you are, Joe?
I think I'm probably about a third of the way through the main story. I've just been doing a lot of tooling about with picking up people and recruiting and stuff.
Yeah. You've gone permadeath, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm full permadeath all the way.
So forever. I didn't go permadeath. I'm kind
coward.
Of
coward.
I have reasons for this because I do kind of half regret it now because it sounds like a much more intense game when you have a lot more actually invested in the characters that way. But also I enjoyed just the reason I didn't pick permadeath is because I wanted to try a lot of silly stuff and mucking around with characters and feel like I basically, you know, if I was mucking around with them, they weren't gone forever sort of thing. But I do kind of wish I'd gone permadeath now. But regardless, I did. Do you know what? I ended up really enjoying this game. I know you're not maybe as hot on it as myself, Joe. I don't know where do you stand, Dale?
I think somewhere in between. Maybe I do really like it, but I think it's got a lot of issues. And I think it feels like a great first step in this concept of the, you know, recruiting everybody. But there's like, it doesn't take long, only playing like 5 hours of that game, to really spot the seams and spot how all the systems, and they're very, like, it doesn't feel as magical as I wanted it to, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm exactly the same. Like, the more I think about it, the more I respect it. And I really do love what it's trying to do. And I'm kind of amazed still that anyone allowed this to be made at a AAA studio.
We're talking about the Players Anyone system specifically.
Yeah, and the census stuff and like the kind of the weird systemic reactive stuff under the hood of that game that makes that allows it to be an open world where NPCs actually make a difference. But I love all that stuff. It's just like Dale says, I just keep running into the same missions in the same places with the same dialogue. And you're just like, I know there has to be a moment at which those things don't work properly.
Yeah.
But the amount of times I've come across it not working properly is annoying, like after a point.
It didn't take too long for me to, I think it was like my eighth operator in it. Recruit, I suppose.
Operative. Yeah.
And it doesn't take long to get like the ball rolling. A couple of hours I had like eight, and then my eighth one was exactly the same voice as my first one. And immediately then it sort of took me out of that system. And then I just realized like they've got a selection of voices and they're just arbitrarily just sort of randomly pulls one and sticks it on them, and with no real rhyme or reason, it feels like maybe male or female. And that's the only distinguishing thing.
Have you had anyone with like the voice modulation that makes it sound fucking mad?
No.
I've got an Irish hitman who sounds like he's on the news talking about like Lance Armstrong's doing bad stuff. You know, I'm thinking of that. That's a very stupid reference. I'm thinking of an obscure Andy Samberg thing about the Tour de France. Anyway, it basically sounds like he's having to go into witness protection, but that's his voice all the time. It's mad. But like, I think the point Dale makes, which I think is most important, is that I hope, I don't necessarily believe, but I hope this is a first step. Like, I want there to be a Legion 2 rather than a Watch Dogs 4, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it could even be like the No Man's Sky trajectory, where it was like, even though that's a system that has, you know, a lot of familiar aspects of like, you know, pulling all this data together and just coming up with these characters, it feels like it has way more depth now. You spot the seams a lot less at this point of the game because they've updated it so much. I don't expect Ubisoft to be doing that, follow that trajectory of like 4 years of updates with Watch Dogs Legion, but it'd be nice if they added to it.
In December, they've got the online coming, which I'm intrigued to see, because if it's multiplayer sort of, not heists, but you know what I mean? Like, I suppose each mission in Watch Dogs, they're kind of like a a heist in a way. You're kind of going into a building and stealing something. So
there is a lot I like about this game. I did really enjoy it, but there's another thing you've just reminded me of there, which I'm not a massive fan of. And Joe, I think you mentioned it the other day as well. Is the feeling like it doesn't feel there's as many options for entering in an area anymore? Like, I don't know if I'm just misremembering what Watch Dogs 2 was like, but it felt like I was presented with several different ways of getting in, and now it just feels like Spider-Bot kind of almost every time.
I loved Watch Dogs 2, but I always kind of, I do fall in that habit, and it's probably part of my fault of not experimenting enough, but if I find a way that works in a game, I will just use it again and again to do it, because, well, if it's not going to tell me I can't do that mission that way, why wouldn't I? Because, like, basically, I just, most missions, hijacked a cargo drone like you can, rode it above the location I needed to go, dropped a spider bot down, and did the mission from there undetected.
Yeah.
Which, because apparently enemies never look up in this game.
This is it. I just think, like, it doesn't offer enough reason to try other things as well. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a cargo drone near you at almost all times. Like, it's not a hard thing to find. You don't need a character who can summon them, no matter what the tutorial tells you. And it just felt to me like my two options every time were get someone with a good gun to go in and kill everyone, or just use a spider bot. And it's like, but it feels like there's not as many hacking puzzles as I remember from Watch Dogs 2.
I will say there's more hacking puzzles the more you go on, I think. And I do like where the story goes at points. It's kind of, there's a lot of cliche in there. If you've seen sci-fi thrillers, you'll see a lot of the tropes they're using.
Yep.
There's a couple of twists, which you probably will see coming. But I do like, there's some cool set pieces at times as well. I do quite like the ending. I think it tells a decent enough story to carry it. And I just like the world. I'm biased. I love London and I just like being in London. But what I will say is, why are they messing up with tube stations? There's now a tube station called Trafalgar Square. No need.
Yeah.
Charing Cross is right next door. She's that.
You know, they haven't got the Leicester Square tube station either. Like, they literally just removed
it. It's weird. I'd like to know the rhyme and reason. Maybe we could do a feature on why they've taken some stations away but added new ones pretty much next to where those ones would be anyway.
There's no Liverpool Street either, which feels like...
No, they've completely removed Liverpool Street.
Yeah, completely got rid of it. You just go from Aldgate to Shoreditch.
You don't know how... I drove around for about 20 minutes, like, going north of Aldgate, like, where's Liverpool Street? Because that's, like, the only massive... Not the only one, but... There's no Paddington, I suppose, but or Victoria even. But
there's King's Cross and Euston, isn't
there's
there?
There's King's Cross, Euston, Farringdon, Waterloo. So there are some big ones, but it's just weird when, like, it's very rare I can turn on a game and not need a map from the get-go. But, like, I could just drive north somewhere. I was like, wait a minute, Liverpool Street isn't here. So I drove around 20 minutes trying to find it. I'm not going to do anything in Liverpool Street, am I? I'm not going to go and get a... I don't know, go get a wasabi. But...
Go to the International Cheese Centre in the basement.
Yeah, exactly.
We've immediately gotten into the thing that no one gives a shit about if you're not from London, which is saying that the London isn't right. What I will say is, as someone who lives in London, fucking hell, like, so
they've
much
got,
of that.
They have got so much of it spot on. I was nitpicking about
there are bits in there that I was like astonished by, where you're just like, why did you bother putting in this? But I love that you did. Like, like the weird changes in architecture, like between kind of Whitechapel and the Thames, and like there's some really lovely thinking in there. And I really like going around and just seeing it as it is. And on the other end, people who aren't from London won't care about this either. But I just think, like, I think it is worth pointing out to people not from here how good a recreation of the town it is.
Yeah. It's so good. And it's almost a shame in a way that I know a lot of the, so you can take over, as you do in a lot of Ubisoft games, take over parts of the city by doing a few missions and then doing a main mission to basically unlock that area. The whole map is unlocked from the start, I should say, but you know, you can unlock extra operatives by doing areas. But in those they use some of the landmarks, but like the main game hardly uses any of those landmarks or anything, or really uses the city center for much. A lot of the missions do kind of take part on the outskirts, which I find a little bit weird. Like, the Thames doesn't really play a part in, like, they don't use the river for anything.
Yeah, despite all the boats being hijackable and there being stuff in there, like, there's no reason to do it. It's kind of strange.
I mean, I know you can't just remove the river from London, but, you know.
I would say, I found the lack of interiors a little bit disappointing as well. Obviously, you've got all your, you know, your enemy areas, but the, like, I last night was playing it and I went to Buckingham Palace. I really wanted to go inside Buckingham Palace and see if I could get in there, but it turns out you can't actually go inside it. And I felt like there's quite a lot. Also, I felt like having the subway system be the way it is was maybe a misstep. Like, they could have built not a fully fledged subway system, but something, you know, underground sections where you, you know, do,
well, and I think I just used it too much as well, because there's no, like, it's not that like you have to pay to use it or anything. Like, I rarely drove anywhere and actually saw the city much, but,
It feels like we're coming out of this like, quite negative, well, don't it? But we did like it.
I just like playing Watch Dogs. I like that kind of loop, which can get a little repetitive, but I don't mind. I'm quite into it, of just scoping out a location, hacking a target. And that's just satisfying, especially when you're not detected. And I do enjoy those, like puzzles where you have to rotate the things to get, like, power lines moving, like the Bioshock kind of, like, you know.
Pipe puzzles,
that sort of thing. Yeah, I enjoy doing that sort of thing. And, yeah, overall, I did have a really good time with it. I just wish there was a little bit more variety, I suppose.
I think multiplayer could be where it sings. Like, if they get some really good missions in there. And I think I have hurt my own experience by jumping in like two-footed on all the recruitment stuff. Like, that's all I wanted to do, because that's what I was so excited about. Like, this, I was primed for this to be my game of the year, because I love those little weird systems bouncing off each other stuff. But, and I think that's hurt my experience of it. And the more I play the main story, the more I'm like, oh, these are the missions I wanted.
So,
and
the main story is the best bit of the game. I think I pretty much mainlined it from the first few hours on, and I had a great time doing that. I didn't really do many recruitments. Once I got like four or five people that I could just rotate between, I just kind of kept them. I know it's different if you're in permadeath,
but that's also the failure of the game to me. Like, if that's how easy it is to play that game with that system, then they've not made that system right.
There's just not any, I feel like they played it almost, it's hard to say they played it safe, because the amount of time and effort it took to make the system work is unbelievable, but almost played it safe in how different each person could be. Like, everyone has the same basic abilities, whereas maybe some people just shouldn't have a gun whatsoever, or some people can't hack. Well, like, I think, as stupid as it, like,
I think Dan Stapleton put it really well in the review, which was like, I wish there were more characters with big downsides but big upsides. So you were like having to mess with characters where it's like, oh, they are so shit at this, but I need them because they're the best person at this. And also, I played a preview of this game where they had a system where you could apply certain people to support stuff. So at E3 last year, there was a whole separate section of recruits that you could put in there, and it would be like home base people. So I was in a car chase being chased by a bunch of drones, and someone came over the radio and was like, I'm hacking the drones for you. And that was a separate character type that you could assign to do that. And I know why things change between previews. I'm not complaining that stuff changed before the main game, because it probably didn't work. But that was the stuff where I was really excited, where it's like, oh, I might find a character who's rubbish to use, but if they sit at home base and they're good at, like, getting me money over time or hacking certain enemy types and stuff, like, that was really exciting to me. And I think you can feel the loss of some of those systems, as well as progression. Like, I think not, it's hard to bond with your characters when they don't change at all from beginning to end. And, like, I think, you know, it's an easy comparison, but Shadow of Mordor, which is what, 2015, 2016? Like, those orcs changed more over the course of a game that old than Watch Dogs characters do over the course of this. And that's not to say that Watch Dogs is a worse system. It's way more in depth. But there's something about having those characters, like, react to you that feels so special still. And I don't think that's in there.
No, but I'm with you. Like, I enjoy, and I just, like, so I enjoy core Watch Dogs games. Like, even Watch Dogs 1, don't get me wrong, I don't love that game, but I had a fine enough time playing that. Like, Aiden Pierce did not excite me, but I had fun hacking and doing the puzzles, so I just like Watch Dogs, and I'm not, I wouldn't say I'm disappointed with Watch Dogs Legion. I feel like it's probably part of our own fault, we hyped ourselves almost too much towards what this game could be. And it just didn't quite hit what it is.
This is it. The problem yeah. with my problem with Watch Dogs Legion is that it is not the game I dreamed of, which is not yeah. fair to Watch Dogs Legion. It's just exactly. that the core idea is so cool mm-hmm. that anything below that feels like a loss. And like Dale says, if we get essentially the Assassin's Creed 1 to Assassin's Creed 2 version of Watch Dogs Legion down the line, if that's allowed to happen, fuck me, I'm still so excited for yeah. it. I just, exactly. I really hope we get there.
I would, if you haven't, check out Dan Stelton's review. He gave it an 8 out of 10. I pretty much agree with that, I think. I would just about give it an 8, I think. So, yeah, overall, a good game, which I would recommend getting, especially as now Cyberpunk has been delayed again. Yeah. And if you're really desperate for a hacking game, there's your one.
Also, can I do a small self-plug? I had a really good chat with Ruffin Prentice, who played Marcus Holloway in Watch Dogs 2. I kind of called him just to ask, have they gotten in touch about Marcus coming back in Watch Dogs Legion? Spoiler, mm-hmm. no, they haven't. He's probably not in it. unless he comes in like a season 2 sort of yeah. post-launch thing.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But I also did... We ended up having this amazing chat about how much he loves that character and how much it meant to him and how interesting he is as a black man in a game who doesn't do stuff that pop culture says is cool for mm-hmm. black people to do. There's his words. And I think I barely wrote in that feature. It's mostly Ruffin's words. And I think he's a fascinating talker about what was so cool about that character. And I hope he doesn't get forgotten either, which is really cool.
There we go. From Watch Dogs Legion, one game we hyped ourselves too much about, to another one, which I don't think Joe could hype himself more about, Hyrule Warriors. Is it the Age of Calamity?
It's just Age of Calamity.
Just Age of Calamity. Is this, I think you tweeted it yesterday, Joe, is this the, if someone pitched a game to you, could they pitch more of a Joe game?
Well, do you know what's mad? Is I had the exact same response to the original Hyrule Warriors, a Zelda game that was also a Dynasty Warriors game. Mm-hmm. And somehow they've made a version of that game that's even more my thing. It's fucking nuts. They surprise released a demo yesterday. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I think there's finally a Warriors game that I can suggest without saying, by the way, it might be shit for you. Like, I genuinely think it's brilliant. I'm hoping to write something about this, but it's not just dropping cool Zelda stuff into a Dynasty Warriors template. It's also mm-hmm. doing really interesting stuff with how Dynasty Warriors games work, which I can get into if we need to. But
please do, because I've never played a Warriors game. I didn't play the first Hyrule Warriors. I've never played. Is it Musou Games?
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there's a lot of people like me who have seen clips of these games, and it just looks mad. Like, you're killing 1,000 enemies at once. What is fun about these games?
Well, what's fun to me about these games is that they are, I find them, despite them being, so they call them 1 versus 1,000 action games. The point being, you are one character who is fully able to just decimate entire, battalions of people by yourself. And it's stupid. And they are repetitive. They are occasionally very badly made. But something about the structure I find on the most basic level, just incredibly relaxing. They are button mashers, but they're button mashers about essentially tidying up. That's the best way I can think of them, is that you have a big map full of mess and you just go and tidy it up, but your broom is a big sword or magic. And what they're doing with Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity is essentially the same thing. You are playing 100 years before Breath of the Wild, when giant armies of horrible monsters were taking down Hyrule, and you are mm-hmm. attempting, and I'm assuming failing, based on how Breath of the Wild happens, to fight back against those armies. Which is I just think is a great idea anyway. They've put it in the Breath of the Wild art style, but they've made it ludicrously over the top. It's still, the one thing I will say, and this is the same for all Warriors games ever, is it really struggles when there's thousands of people on screen at once. I don't really give a shit. It barely matters. What I love that it's doing as a Dynasty Warriors fan is the problem, particularly Warriors spin-offs have had over the years, is Dynasty Warriors' key thing to me is the characters are simple as fuck. They have about 10 moves each, and you learn what they are, and you just spam them over and over again forever. And the way it gets over that is by having like 80 to 100 characters. So as soon as you're bored of one, you're just like, fuck it, I'll just move to someone else. In Hyrule Warriors, it looks like there might be about 10 at the moment. I haven't really looked into it. And that has always been a problem for Warriors spin-offs, because as soon as they get down to low amounts of characters, because there's not that many to choose from because of the license, it's just fucking boring. And so that's an issue.
Yeah.
In this, they actually have meaningfully different abilities that could seemingly do different stuff. So, like, every character has the normal set of stuff. Light attacks, heavy attacks, special attacks. But then they've also all got the Sheikah Slate and the different abilities that gives you in Zelda. But every character's use of those different abilities are different. So, like, take the bombs. Link just throws fucking loads of bombs. It's really stupid and it's really funny. Impa makes a bomb float above a group of people who get sucked into it and blown away, which is a completely different style of attack. And then Zelda's one, she summons a giant walking bomb that fires other smaller bombs out of it before it itself explodes.
That sounds very good.
It's great. I want that. And like, the idea that we're going to get this many more abilities per character is really interesting. Like, ultimately, it's a Warriors game, so it probably won't make a huge amount of difference. But the fact that there's way more to dig into and learn and mess about with is cool. Also, it's got a full world map where you earn items and that gets you, like, story-related upgrades. So you can get extra attacks or change types of attacks and different weapons. And, like, it's really fiddling around with how much those things mean.
So have they put a lot more Zelda into this one than they did in the past one, would you say?
So like, Hyrule Warriors was more of an actual Zelda game in as much as you earned items that let you get to different places on the map. This is more like Breath of the Wild in as much as it's a Dynasty Warriors where it feels like there's real reactivity. Like, you know, using Cryonis on... Cryosis? Can't remember. The ice spell on things in water makes the different things happen to when you're on land. And, like, you can mess with how things work, how things interact. You can cut down trees to get apples to heal. Like, it's really meaningfully feeding in Breath of the Wild mechanics into a Dynasty Warriors thing. And, like...
Does your sword break after four hits?
It doesn't, which which is weird, considering how much more you use it. You earn different swords and you can, like, forge them into different things and stuff like that. But it really feels like... I've only... You know, the demo's maybe an hour of content. But even after that, I'm kind of like, shit, this might actually be a Dynasty Warriors game that means something to play for a long time beyond just the gentle relaxation of killing 2,000 bad guys. And I'm really fucking excited for it. I can't
wait. Available for free now, isn't it, on Switch?
Yeah. And if you finish it, all your save game data transfers, so it's worth playing through if you want to.
When have they said when it's actually coming out?
November 20.
That is a lot sooner than I thought.
I am so excited. I can't wait.
A late showing there for Joe's game at the end.
honestly, I was worried that I was going to have to make that case at some point, but I genuinely think there will be people who love this who've never liked a Dynasty Warriors game before. I think it's so cool.
Do you know what? I'm partially interested. I know Al's been playing it and he's not
Al
a
really likes
Warriors
it.
Personal, but he is a Breath of the Wild obsessive, so like yourself, so it makes sense. I'm definitely going to check it out. That's the good thing about an hour's worth of demos, because you should be able to tell if it's for you from that, hopefully.
And I'm sure there will be people who just can't deal with the fact that it's that sounds more aggressive than I mean it to. I'm sure there'll be people who don't like that it doesn't run properly and stuff like that, but it doesn't run that badly. So I'm fine with it.
If you can't deal with bad frame rates, then Joe doesn't want to know.
If you're some kind of frame rate cuck, I don't want
to... Please don't know what email means. In if you are a frame rate cuck and explain why. That's the sort of language you'd hear from Borat. Is it? I don't know.
Certainly Borat's talking about frame rates.
Certainly from some of the people he's interviewing, I assume.
Yes.
But.
Yeah.
Have we all watched Borat 2?
No.
I have,
okay.
Yes.
I have. I was fairly underwhelmed. Just going to put that out there. Laughed a couple of times. I don't know. I just kind of... I'm over it. I think I'm just at the point with all this sort of comedy. I think, especially in the world we're in at the moment, like when it is an hour and a half of look, Americans can be stupid, and some of them can be racist. I've just kind of go, yeah, I know that. Now,
I would, like, what are you saying? I suppose, like back in whenever it was, 2006, the idea was that it was exposing this underbelly, right? This idea of there is these people that have these harsh viewpoints, and now we're kind of, it's in our face every day.
We're in the middle of it.
But I would say,
I will also add, I only said Americans because the whole film takes place in America. I know that these issues are everywhere in the world.
I would say though that with Borat, that's still my favourite stuff though. Like the scripted sections, they're fine. It's just, but the moments where he's a tool, he's using Borat as a tool to bring the crazy out of people. Like he gets them to lower their inhibitions and to really say some crazy stuff. I still find it shocking. And like, for example, that scene when he goes to the, get the baby removed, so to speak, in the pregnancy area. That is like, it still brings out some shocking reactions, you know, how people react to these things, even though, you know, deep down they should, like a normal person would react in outrage to these things, but it's just showing like almost like the extreme levels of politeness that people have as well sometimes. I think it's fascinating to watch, but
I think those are the bits, that I don't get on with as much, where it is just people being very accommodating and it almost feels like taking advantage of. There's like an older black lady who's very nice to his, in quotation marks, daughter. And like, she's just giving very nice advice. And I think I read yesterday, like, she felt betrayed by it. She didn't know this was going on. And then I was just like, yeah, that is a bit bad, because she was just seemed like a very nice person who's.
Oh, I mean, that's the thing though, isn't it? That everybody who's ever been in these films has probably felt betrayed by it or laugh with it, because that's the whole
shtick. I think
it
feels worse when they are a nice person though. Like when it's, if it's just an outright racist, I'm not going to feel bad for them for being made to look like a fool.
But, I don't know. I quite enjoyed it. I don't think it's a patch on the first film, but then the first film was such, like, you know, captured, you know, a zeitgeist of the time. I don't think it was ever going to be able to live up to that anyway. I think, is it Maria Bakalova? I think her name is. I think she's fantastic in it. Like, she almost, and I think that's such a great decision of bringing someone almost to take the place of Borat, because he's so well known. I mean, obviously they make that a joke in the film as well. The idea of him dressing up in costume. I don't know. I did quite enjoy it. But I watched, so that last weekend I watched that, and I also watched Trial of Chicago 7. I know you spoke about it briefly last week.
Very briefly, yeah.
So I had a Sacha Baron Cohen weekend, but that is a phenomenal film. Like,
yeah, so
I just want to chip in and also say everybody should watch that film. I just enjoyed it so much.
Well, it's kind of saying a lot of the stuff that he's trying to say in the other film, but in a much, much, much better way, mainly because Aaron Sorkin wrote it, and it's not just relying on the writing of some rednecks. But yeah, that's probably the main difference. But do you know what? Borat's free on Amazon, so if you have it, give it a watch. But just don't go in with the highest hopes in the world, and maybe you'll have a good time. I think because I went in to watch it after seeing a lot of like 9 out of 10 reviews, and I left thinking, I don't know what film I just watched compared to that.
Do you reckon you accidentally got the sort of Anchorman, the lost footage type?
What's wrong? I know, you know, compared to any other genre, comedy is the most subjective of all. But, you know, it's fine. It's fine. You know, as long as no one got hurt, who cares? Do you know who might get hurt, though? The loser of The Endless Search. Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah, and the ones and twos, we got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos, we got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got question for you. Is it in the search?
Let's see a try, mate.
But you've just admitted that you're going to lose.
Well, there's
so that's
50% chance I could lose, yes.
I don't know, 50% is pretty nice to you, Dale, based on your performance in this game. it's my quiz this week, and by my quiz, I mean Dave in Banbury's quiz, and not Dave in Banbury who listens to our podcast. He actually made it up for Ellis and John on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Okay.
But I think this is fine, because essentially what is the Endless Search if not a subconscious rip-off of Ellis and John's made-up game section? So I think it's... Let's do it.
Yeah.
This is a game called... I think they called it What's Number Two, which sounds like it's about shit. It's not. In this game, I will ask you not to give me the number one answer in a list, but the second highest answer in a list.
Okay.
For instance, what's the second biggest country in the world? It's not Russia, it's Canada. Or is it the other way around? Can't remember. the rest of these, I actually have the answers for. There are some caveats here, right? So, I'm going to ask it to one of you, and if you get it wrong, the other person can steal after that.
Okay.
I'm also going to say, and this is adding.
And can we keep going back and forth until someone gets it right?
No, we're going to go. No, let's go back and forth. I like that. That's fine.
Well, I mean, there has to be a limit on that, surely.
Yeah, if it gets ridiculous.
So I've got the top five answers for all of them. Okay. So I think that kind of works. Just because then I can actually make it interesting. the other thing is, I'm going to test out an idea. If you want to go spicy, you can name the number three for 2 points instead of 1 point. How about that?
God. But can you do both for 3 points?
No, you can't.
Okay. That's rude.
I'm just going for the sort of home and away style. and I think the easiest way to do this is, and I'm stealing this format as well, Dale, you're going to go first, and I want you to pick a number between 1 and 5, and that will be the question I give you.
Okay. Is there a theme to these questions?
They're just sort of our kind of things.
Okay. All right. Okay. So it wasn't like you started off by an example was geography, and I was like,
it's not geography. it's stuff we would cover.
Right. Okay. Good. 4.
I knew you'd pick 4, and I'm glad you did. This is which character has made the second most supporting appearances in Peep Show.
Oh, my Lord.
Ooh.
What counts as supporting? So outside the main two?
Anyone outside Mark and Jeremy.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And I want to hear your thinking around this as well.
Oh, I don't know.
Also, you could choose the third if you want to go crazy.
Oh. It's almost worth the
risk, so I have to designate as the third.
You have to say whether you're going to choose the second or third.
Oh, okay. Ooh. I don't see that as serving any value, really. Why would I choose the third?
Well, you get double points.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I thought it was less points. Oh, yeah. In that case, I'm going to choose the third.
Okay.
I'm going to say... Oh, God. So I really want to say Superhands, but part of me thinks he's going to be number one. I'm going to say third. I'm going to say the Johnson.
Oh. Interesting. You are incorrect.
Wow.
Before I reveal anything, I will say Johnson is the fifth highest supporting appearances with 16 episodes.
See, is that it? It feels like so much more.
I don't know if to talk it through so that gives Dale hints. But
I forgot we're going back and forth.
Yeah. It's got to be... between I'm sure he knows the characters, so it's not like I'm revealing much by saying there's a few bigger ones.
You know what, let's not do the back and forth, because actually
okay,
that's
so
mad.
I just get one. Okay,
you get one, so you can talk through
it. So the main ones, it's got to be, like you said, Superhands, Sophie.
I was thinking Dobby, and then I was thinking, but she didn't come until like halfway in, so.
But yeah, I don't know if she'd have more than Johnson. I'm trying to think, but she is. I mean, it's got to be like Sophie and Superhands 1 and 2, hasn't it?
Want it to be Gerald.
Oh.
Gerard.
Oh, Gerard. Sorry, yeah. Gerard.
Tubing his nose.
I'm trying to think who would be... Oh, I suppose... Big Sue's. She had more than... Johnson,
I felt like she went away for quite a while, though. I don't know. It's been a while since I watched Peep Show.
I love the depth of knowledge of Peep Show we're showing here. It's great.
Mad Andy only had 2, didn't he?
But what a 2.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm going to go with second, and I'm going to say
Oh, no, 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 you're stealing on third.
I have to steal on third.
Yeah,
sorry,
you have to go with what the person was guessing.
Do you know what? I'm going to go with Big Sue's for third.
You are incorrect. Big Sue's does not make the top five. You are not going to believe who is in third here. Number one, Superhands, 36 episodes. Mm-hmm. Big time player. Sophie, it's number two with 33.
That's who I was going to go with for two.
Number three, Boys. Didn't even hear his name. Jeff. Jeff
really?
is in 20 episodes in, like, of Peep Show.
I suppose he's in like every episode of the first two or three seasons.
That's true. Yeah.
Dobby is fourth with 18 and Johnson is fifth with 16.
There we go.
I thought good stuff. Unfortunately, that is my favourite question. So it's all downhill from here.
No.
Cardi, pick a number between 1 and 4.
I'm just going to go 1.
Okay. I think you've picked a good one here. actually, there's a wrinkle. According to Wikipedia, I want to know the second or third, your choice, best-selling video game. And I will say best-selling. Selling.
Yeah.
Selling.
You're saying it's not Wii Sports.
I'm not saying that.
Okay.
And this counts across, like, all...
All formats.
Everything, like... This is where
I want to say best selling means copies sold, not highest grossing.
Okay.
Or most downloaded.
Okay.
Interesting.
There's ones that have been in different forms. Does it still count as the biggest?
I think I know which one you're thinking of, actually.
There's a couple like that in there. Do you know what? I'm going to go with it. I'm going to go third.
Mm-hmm.
GTA 5.
Oh no.
Okay.
Good guess.
I feel like this is near the top. I want
to
say...
You have to go third. You have to go
third. I'm just going to say it because it's one in my head. Tetris.
Tetris is the third best-selling game.
I thought that was number one.
It's but I think, unfortunately, Tetris has been in so many forms, so it's listed as Tetris EA.
That's what I was going for. I didn't... Yeah.
Yeah. So, number one is Minecraft. 200 million sold. Number two is GTA 5, which is 135 million
sold.
Just
stuck with the two.
Then Tetris, Wii Sports, and PUBG.
So Wii Sports is in there, even though it was never sold. Does that count?
It was sold with a console, so I think it counts as having been sold.
Will you count Astrobot as a copy sold?
Probably. Wikipedia might. I don't know.
Yeah.
So Fortnite doesn't make it in the top because it is the most downloaded, but not the not the most sold. 350 million. It's nuts.
Diet, nothing.
That's that it. Dale.
Hello.
1-3 with your 2-point lead.
2.
Interesting. I want to know the second or third highest rated film on IMDb.
Oh.
Oh, God.
Cardi's going to absolutely decimate me on this one.
I can't remember the order.
Okay.
I know number one, which is annoying.
That is the point.
So I think the one I'm thinking of, I think, might be number one, but I'm not sure. So I'm just going to say it because it's the one I'm thinking of. Shawshank Redemption.
Incorrect.
That is number one, isn't it?
Were you going for second or third? Sorry.
It doesn't matter. Added it second, I guess.
Well, it does for Cardi.
All right.
You were going for second. Cardi?
I think Shawshank is one. I'm going Godfather Part 1.
Yeah, that's the other one I was thinking of.
You are correct. That is the second highest rated. That's a point for Cardi.
My second highest rated. There you go.
Nice. It goes Shawshank Redemption, Godfather Part 2, The Dark Knight, and 12 Angry Men.
Okay.
Seven Samurai used to be right up there. It's dropped.
Slipped a little bit.
That's 2 points to Dale, 1 point to Cardi. Dale doing a neat little second swap so that Cardi can't catch him up.
I almost need to go for two here.
One or two?
Two.
Okay. I'm going for the highest video game Metacritic score of all time.
Oh.
Now, this is interesting because there are actually multiple answers that are correct.
What?
For two and three. Because there are several games with the same score.
What? So you can just say any one of them?
Yeah. It's the wild card, baby. There is only one number one. and then there are several twos and more than several threes. Okay. So
I've got two in mind, and do I go for third or second? That's the question. There's a couple of games.
Do you think you know what the number one game of all time on Metacritic is?
I don't think I do, but I've got a couple in my mind that would be in like the top few.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go for third because I kind of need the 2 points.
Okay.
You got more selection as well. It's smart.
I'd say it's a hard... Well, not necessarily. Well, yeah. Anyway.
I'm going to go with... One of two. I'm going with God of War 2018.
That is not in there.
Ooh. Right.
Can we go back
to this one? Were you going for third?
I was going for third. Yeah.
So Dale, you could take a commanding winning lead.
So I was thinking of Zelda games, but then I was thinking that's very likely to be the top two or around there. So I'm going to go for a wild card and I'm going to say Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2.
Dale. That is the number two.
Oh, shit.
If you had gone for Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, you would have been correct, which is mad. So the number one highest Metacritic-rated score of all time is Ocarina of Time.
Mm-hmm. My number other two, one I was going to say was Breath of the Wild.
That is correct. That would have been right. The second is made up of Tony Hawk's 2, GTA 4, and weirdly, the original Soul Calibur on Dreamcast. and then for number three, there are loads. Super Mario Galaxy 1 and 2, Red Dead 2, GTA 5, Breath of the Wild, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, Perfect Dark, which is insane.
Yeah.
Metroid Prime, GTA 3, Super Mario Odyssey, Halo Combat Evolved, and get this. NFL 2001.
Specifically 2001.
All of 2K1. Above God of War.
Insane. All of those were above God of War. Which
Even
means...
Red Dead, that's surprising, because I thought God of War reviewed better than Red Dead slightly. But there you go.
It's not actually fair to do a fifth one with Cardi going first, is it?
Well, I'm not going first.
No, with Dale going first.
Okay.
That's the way it's gone.
All right, let's just
It means I can only draw, really.
If he goes for a three and misses maybe it, he's not going to go for out.
He's not going to go for a three, is he, though? Yeah, he's a coward.
What? I mean, you don't... I was already going to say I wanted to play it fair. You didn't need to bait me into it.
I already have, haven't I?
Yeah.
I'm asking for, through online play alone, who is... the second or third most used Street Fighter V character.
Fucking hell. Oh my god. Right, so I'm going to say third, because let's keep this interesting. Mm-hmm. Street Fighter V, I'd never really play. So the problem is all the extra characters that I don't really know about. I wonder if any of them have become like top tier characters. But I'm going to go for a classic. And I'm going to say Ken.
Ken is not correct. Cardi, this is your chance to win.
So, I know they're very popular, mainly because that little video we did. Yeah. I'm going with my girl, Karen.
Karen is not in the top five. Dale takes it.
Yes.
I was told she was one of the most popular.
two points to one. Not a high-scoring game.
Nah, but
it's a hard game. It's a
but
hard
it was
game.
Fun. It goes Ryu. Is 14.379% of all characters online used. Ken is number two. Akuma is number three.
Okay.
Kami and then Chun-Li. So all quite recognisable.
Yeah, all classics. Yeah.
Well.
Did we like that game? I like that.
Yeah, I enjoyed playing it. I don't know if people enjoyed listening.
It's a bit of a fucker to come up with questions for, because not many people make lists like that. I had to go on. Someone made a graph of all those Peep Show appearances, and I had to manually count it.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's good fun. I enjoyed it.
Well done, Dave in Banbury, who probably doesn't listen to our show.
Probably. Yeah, definitely.
If you do and you've got more questions like that, you know, send them in. Some feedback.
Yep. I'm first. And this is from Tony from the Chicago suburbs.
Tony!
Yeah. And he says, "Hello, my UK friends. As an admirer of the various accents of the British Isles, I was wondering what part of the UK Dale is from. I love his accent, and I find it a bit unique. Anyway, if you guys ever decide to do a strictly film podcast, I would be all in. Not that I don't love game talk, but I can talk all day about film. I have thought about trying to start a film podcast, but I don't have anybody to chat with on a long form basis, aside from my Australian fiance who doesn't like having her voice heard that much. Love the show. You guys are amazing.
You wouldn't believe it, but I hate the sound of my own voice.
Do a film podcast by yourself.
Yeah. I would say, like, I know there's lots of people who, you know, make friends online and, you know, start podcasts doing, and like, we're doing a podcast remotely right now.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, you don't, doesn't have to be someone you know in person. Like,
mate, I'd love to do just a film podcast, but I just don't think we have the time, sadly, to do two podcasts.
Do it, Tony. A one man show.
To answer your question, Tony, I am from Coventry, although my accent is not massively indicative of Coventry. It tends, like, mine's sort of a weird sort of mesh because my wife is from down south way, Cardi's way. And so there's some sort of
Carlito's way.
Well, we've been together nearly 10 years, so there's some sort of blurring of my accent since I haven't lived up there in a long time. So, yes, a weird combination.
It's weird because kind of Matt's has got a Midland accent as well.
So he's Black Country, though, so his accent does not sound like he comes from the Black Country at all, which is odd. Oh,
there we go.
Didn't you say, Dale, that there's a Coventry City chant about how weird the accent is?
Yeah, well, it's just one line. It says, it's called In Our Coventry Homes, is what it's called. And it says, the line is,
that's we our Partridge podcast.
It says, we hey, come on. It says, we speak with an accent exceedingly rare. You want a cathedral, we've got one to spare.
Imagine get rid of about it. Your cathedral. Right.
Have you seen the first cathedral, mate? It's a bomb site.
It's not a very intimidating football chant, is it?
No, it's just
you want a cathedral.
Saying we're proud of our city and we've got two cathedrals. How many cathedrals have you got, mate? It's that sort of thing. Not you directly, you're just saying.
Well, London, yeah, for you, mate.
Not you specifically.
Me? I don't own what a was cathedral. That old, I can confirm that.
It's a myth, right? The idea of, like, you know, if you have a cathedral then you're a city or something like that
used to be the it's not anymore, you can be a city.
So I guess that's what it's based on, is like, we're a city and it was, you know, sung against people who weren't cities.
There you go, put them down. You know, good on you. I think you've got another piece of feedback. That was that was one you just wanted to talk about, your accent.
I just wanted to answer Tony's question. being a bit narcissistic there. This is from Matthew Cooper. Hello gents, hope you're all well and thanks for the listening. Okay. Second time writing. First time I submitted a very difficult and joyless endless search game back in 2018. So apologies for that. It was an extremely low scoring from what I remember. Just like today's
game.
Low
scoring game's a good game.
That's why we did it today. It was a tribute to Matthew.
As Cardi keeps mentioning The Social Network, this email is pretty moot if he isn't on. Well, he is on.
I'm always there. Don't worry.
He said he likes to work to it, so I'd also recommend the Nine Inch Nails album Ghosts 1-4. Is that how you'd say it, or is it?
One to four.
From around 2008. Lots of the tracks from it were reworked for the film. It's a very similar hashtag focus vibe.
I'll just answer that. Yeah, I've listened to it a couple of times. I'm not the world's biggest Nine Inch Nails fan. I do much prefer Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross when they're doing their composing, but yeah, Nine Inch Nails is one of those bands I've tried listening to a few times. I've never quite cracked it for me, but one day it might click. I do put on some instrumental stuff. If I put on an instrumental album, it'll probably be This Will Destroy You. So there you go. Yeah. Which, they sound like a very aggressive band. They're not. They're lovely.
I assume there's a typo here, because the next bit says, also a fun little Trent R. Not story. Maybe it was Trent Reznor and they put a space in
there.
I don't know. Also a funny little Trent Reznor story. Back in 2013, when Nine Inch Nails headlines Reading and Leeds, they actually co-headlined with Biffy Clyro, and Trent Reznor supposedly was never told and went on quite the tirade on tweeting and tweeted, who the fuck is Biffy Clyro? To be fair, who the fuck are Biffy Clyro? How dare you, Matthew? They are one of my favourite bands.
That's mad. Band, yeah. I saw Nine Inch Nails are way better than Biffy Clyro. I saw them headline that Reading that year. I was doing some young loving in that crowd. It was great.
Sorry.
It was a very special time for me.
Sounds good.
It was great.
Biffy Clyro, one of the best live bands I've seen.
Yes, definitely.
They're amazing.
Nine Inch Nails.
This Will Destroy You, by the way, did the score for Moneyball, so you know, a lot of their songs are in it. So you may, if you listen to the Moneyball score, which maybe you have listened to this
one. I fucking love Moneyball.
Yeah. You know, that's an incredible film.
I was looking for the game this week. I was looking at the most watched Netflix movies of the week, and Moneyball's in there right now. It's brilliant.
It's a banger.
Netflix must be on a Sorkin tear after Chicago, Trial of Chicago 7. That's my theory. And it was the Baseball World Series this week as well, so maybe people are in a baseball mood.
I first watched Moneyball.
It all comes together.
I first watched Moneyball not long after watching the Bash Brothers Experience. So I felt like for a short period I was an Oakland Athletics fan. Like, so it just merged into me.
I've got this from Russell Morby. Hi, long time listener, first time writing in. I actually have a couple of questions about the upcoming PS5. Oh yeah, we asked about this. So I was one of the lucky ones and managed to get a PS5 pre-order, and I'm really looking forward to it arriving along with Cyberpunk 2077. This was written before this week. However, I've only just realised that the optimal PS5 version of that game is not the one that will be released soon. It will come sometime in the future, which is true, 2021. My first question is, I don't know whether to play the PS4 game with slightly upgraded graphics on the PS5 or wait for that optimal PS5 version. So this still makes sense from a December release.
Yeah, still relevant.
Do you guys think the difference in the experience will be big enough to be worth the wait? I'm debating the same with whether to wait for The Last of Us 2 remaster, as I've yet to play that game. Secondly, what the fuck
should
is...
Should we answer that bit first?
Let's do that bit.
Last of Us 2, I'd probably just play it.
Play that
because
now.
Because they haven't even announced there is a remaster. You'd maybe think in a year they might, but I don't know.
The Last of Us 2 looks better than most next-gen games I've seen so far. So
yeah, exactly.
I don't think it makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. Cyberpunk, it really depends how much you actually care what that game looks like. To me, that game, I'm excited for, like, the RPG.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it looking nice is going to be good, but it's not what I'm in it for. Interestingly, we don't even know if the next-gen version, when it comes out, will have ray tracing, because that is an exclusive to NVIDIA PC graphics cards for a certain amount of time, which is
what
bizarre.
Has it come to? Why are we giving out exclusives for graphical elements?
I know,
that's ridiculous.
It's mad.
But so I'm just worried about that game in general on current-gen consoles, especially if you've got a PS4 Pro or a 1X, might not be as big an issue, but the thought of playing Cyberpunk on like an OG PS4 to me feels like it could kill it.
Yeah.
It's not great. Russell, second question. Secondly, what the fuck is HDMI 2.1 all about? Do I need to shell out thousands of pounds for a new TV too to make it all worthwhile? I currently have a 4K TV, but it's about 4 years old now. Are you guys upgrading your TVs? With 2020 being the way it is, I appreciate these are very much first world problems. However, I'm sure I'm not the only one wondering this, and your guys' views on this would be greatly appreciated, especially considering we may well be spending more time indoors in the upcoming months. Keep up the great work. Cheers, Russ from Oxford. P.S. The drowning special you guys did is a 2020 highlight. Wait for sandwiches, baby.
Wait for sandwiches, yeah. Oh, could secede it. I'm not buying a new TV anytime soon. I'm sticking with my one.
I did just buy a new TV, but it was from a friend and it's 2 years old. It's just because I didn't have a 4K TV and now I do. And it's beautiful and I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, 2.1 gives you faster refresh rates. And it includes what? It goes up to 8. It can do 8K. Nothing's in 8K at the moment anyway. Yeah. So.
I would say, you know, if you play that game, you're forever going to be chasing technology. So I say, when you want a new TV, buy the best you can get right then. And then you'll buy a new one when that TV is... Yeah, like, I think it's a silly, like, fruitless endeavour to be constantly trying to upgrade your TV.
I pretty much... I buy a TV as often as I buy a console, so what, like, every 7-8 years?
So, about 5 to 6 years is when I get a new TV,
Yeah. So, yeah, I might get one in a couple of years, but at the moment, I think if you have a good 4K TV, it'll be perfectly fine. I wouldn't...
It seems like Russell's big into his graphics, isn't he?
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there you go.
And can I quickly drop in some unexpected feedback that I just wanted to say? I'm very happy at the number of people who've tweeted me saying they've started watching Taskmaster. That's amazing. I do also want to respond, and I'm really sorry, I can't remember your name, but someone messaged us to say, quite rightly, that when I listed amazing people in Taskmaster, everyone I listed was a white man, and that show does not just have white men on it. I was actually thinking about that as I was saying it and panicking while I realized I couldn't remember anyone in the moment, which is just one of those horrible things that happens. But you're absolutely right. Nish Kumar, Sarah Phillips, Kerry Godleyman, like there are some amazing non-white male comedians on that show, and it is fantastic. So thank you for bringing me up on that. That was correct.
There we go. There we go. I've got some feedback here from Alan Ross. Says, hey guys, love the show. Having recently finished The Last of Us Part 2, I decided to give Need for Speed Payback a go.
What?
The natural continuation.
Yep.
What a pile of hot garbage that game is, yeah. Even for a free PS Plus game. It's not all terrible, but the one tip I would give to anyone thinking about trying it would be to turn the dialogue volume down to zero. Don't suffer through the embarrassingly terrible acting. My main gripe, however, is that the upgrade system is one of the most broken mechanics I've seen in a very long time. A loot box style random card based upgrade system that is tied to individual cars. So not only do you have almost no control over how you upgrade your cars, you lose everything when you buy a new car. Ridiculous. This has got me thinking, what other games have one / multiple terrible mechanics? Also, in my opinion, Need for Speed peaked with Most Wanted. If you're talking about the original Most Wanted, I agree, because that's one of my favourite racing games ever, and has been getting progressively worse with each release. Are there any series that you feel jumped the shark a long time ago? So first of all, that Need for Speed, I remember me and Dale going to a preview event of that. I think that was one of my very first preview events. Might have been like my first or second. And I remember that loot box system for the car upgrades.
Yeah, it was mad.
And yeah, playing at the time, just going, what, so... It's like like you open a loot box, basically, and it's just like, oh, am I getting an epic, I don't know, accelerator? I don't know what they had. I can't remember. A blue gearbox. Oh, yeah. Is it good?
It felt like that design was potentially, like, imposed upon them from above around that time because, like, you know, EA were trying to push those sort of things. And,
but a lot of it isn't even tied to them. Like, even you earn that through the game without microtransactions, it's all through loot boxes, which is a mad way... Yeah. For a game where you're manually upgrading cars, that is a mad decision to just get random stuff all the time.
I would say when he said, I do think Most Wanted is a fantastic game, but saying they get progressively worse with each release is not correct, because I thought Heat was pretty good last year that came out, and then this year we got Hot Pursuit Remastered as well, which is obviously a great game, just refreshed.
I just loved the original Most Wanted. I like a lot of those racing games when they were more simple, and it was just stripped back. You stole cars, you did races. I don't need a lot more than that. But yeah, I haven't been into Need for Speed for a while. Talking about games that have, like, I suppose, like, good games that have a bad mechanic.
Yeah, struggling to think.
I did have one earlier, and I've completely forgotten what it is, and that's annoying.
Yeah, maybe we should have thought about this one before.
We'll open that one up to be
on the theme of the week. Dynasty Warriors 9 took the flavor of Dynasty Warriors and then put it in an open world for absolutely no fucking reason, and it was shite. So that would be mine.
There you go.
As for series that jumped the shark, that's actually quite hard, because you don't tend to find series that run on for long without doing well.
I suppose a lot of people say sports games do. FIFA maybe.
Yeah.
I would say jump the shark necessarily, but haven't had a major improvement in a few years.
I would say Tony Hawk series jumped the shark with when it did the ride.
That's a good show.
And maybe you could say the same for like music games as well, like Guitar Hero and Rock Band, I'm sure at some point. Although saying that, they just feel like people got bored of them as opposed to making a really wrong decision.
Yeah, they definitely had a peak though, didn't they? And they carried on for maybe one or two games.
But jumping the shark implies like a crazy decision that's kind of just...
Yeah, yeah, Tony Hawk's Ride is literally the perfect answer for that. That is an insane decision that ruined the series.
There we go. If anyone else has got any of those, IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com.
And you've got probably a couple of weeks left to get in your sandwich stories.
Yes. Yeah. I'll put this out there. It's coming. It's not imminent, you know.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised if this is closer to Christmas, the sandwich story. Let's put it that way. So you've got time to... But
yeah, we just want to be clear that you were joking about the launch week of consoles, right?
Yeah, that is definitely a launch. That is definitely a joke, sorry. maybe it's a Christmas special of some sort. But yeah, and please don't make them up. I want genuine sandwich stories. I'll spot a phony sandwich when I see one.
Send us pictures of your best sandwich as well. That's what we really want to see.
That's great for a podcast.
Yes, good for us though.
We can describe them. That's true.
I want to be inspired to make these sandwiches. I need to see a picture of them.
That's very good. What music should we have? Something from...
We were talking about Nine Inch Nails, weren't we?
We've got the Astrobot music. It's always good. A track from Watch Dogs. We haven't talked about the Watch Dogs radio system, but that's another day because that just doesn't work.
It's got three lines on it though. So
yeah, it has got three lines. Play Three Lions.
And we are the firm. Put three lines on it. There we go. Done.
There we go. Easy. Done. That was enjoyable. Bye-bye.
Bye. Everyone seems to know the score. They've seen it all before. They just know, they're so sure that England's gonna throw it away. Gonna blow it away, but I know they can play. Cause I remember three lines on the shirt. Jules Rimet still gleaming. 30 years of hurt.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I talk to the spirit pilot?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.